Like to welcome you to the next episode of Two Men in the Bible fighting the cosmic battle. And Bob, I tell you, I'm excited to go through the next two chapters. This is interesting stuff. This is, you know, especially after chapter 39, we've seen again some great instances or examples of faith and examples of what each of us should do. And an example of God being with someone. And so I'm really excited for the next two chapters.
Great. Well, let's dive in and do them. Let's read chapter 40 first, and we'll discuss it, and then we'll move on. Then it came about, after these things, the cupbearer and the baker for the king of Egypt offended their lord, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh was furious with his two officials, the cupbearer and the chief baker. So he put them in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard, in the jail, the same place where Joseph was imprisoned. The captain of the bodyguard put Joseph in charge of them, and he took care of them, and they were in confinement for some time. Then the cupbearer and the baker for the king of Egypt, who were confined in the jail, both had a dream the same night, each man with his own dream, and each dream with its own interpretation. When Joseph came to them in the morning and observed them, behold, they were dejected. He asked Pharaoh's officials who were with him in the confinement in his master's house, "Why are your faces so sad today?" And then they said to him, "We've had a dream. There's no one to interpret it." Then Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell it to me, please." So the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph and said to him, "In my dream, behold, there was a vine in front of me. And on the vine were three branches. And as it was budding, its blossoms came out, and its clusters produced ripe grapes. Now Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, so I took the grapes and squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup, and I put the cup into Pharaoh's hand." Then Joseph said to him, "This is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Within 3 more days, Pharaoh, lift up your head and restore you to your office. You will put Pharaoh's cup into his hand according to your former custom when you were his cupbearer. Only keep me in mind when it goes well with you. And please do me a kindness by mentioning me to Pharaoh to get me out of this house. For I was in fact kidnapped from the land of the Hebrews. Even here I have done nothing that they should have put me into the dungeon." When the chief baker saw that he had interpreted favorably, he said to Joseph, "I also saw in my dream, and behold, there were 3 baskets of white bread on my head. In the top basket were some of all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh. The birds were eating them out of the basket on my head." Then Joseph answered and said, "This is its interpretation. The 3 baskets are 3 days. Within 3 more days, Pharaoh will lift up your head from you, will hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat your flesh off you." Thus it came about on the 3rd day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast for all his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer, the head of the chief baker among his servants. He restored the chief cupbearer to his office, and he put the cup into Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker, just as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him.
First question.
Okay.
So, a cupbearer and a baker are officials?
Oh, I never even prepared for that question. Well, here's why. Yes, indeed. Big time, guys.
Really?
Big time. In fact, Nehemiah was a cupbearer. His whole book of the Bible named after him. He's a cupbearer to one of the Persian kings. That was, I know it sounds a little strange to us. I don't know what a modern day equivalent might be. Not exactly chief of staff or
but in the cabinet. Those were big guys.
A baker.
Yeah. How were you going to get to Pharaoh? How would you get to him? You know, if you were an enemy, were you going to poison him?
True.
Baker's pretty important. What Pharaoh drinks, pretty important. Those were huge positions, and they would not just, you know, you sort of have this picture, okay, guy made some bread and, you know, puts it out there, or the cupbearer guy, oh, okay, here's your wine. But they're with him. They're eating with him. They're constantly part of the, they're very close with Pharaoh. So good first question. I forget, you know, listeners, yeah, cupbearer, baker, what's the deal? But those were powerful people.
The candlestick maker wasn't quite up there with them.
They're part of the court. Very, very powerful people.
So, now, what, I don't know if I totally understand here. So is Joseph a prophet? Is that what we're hearing?
Now, don't forget, the gigantic banner under which to understand the character Joseph is wise man.
Okay.
So, Daniel does the exact same thing in the book of Daniel. He's interpreting Nebuchadnezzar's dreams and so on. So it's, Joseph would not have been labeled strictly prophet. He doesn't, quote, speak for God.
Right.
That's the essence of being prophet. But he's God's wisdom. Which in many ways may trump being a prophet. In a lot of ways.
And he points that out, that do not interpretations belong to God?
Right. Oh, very much so. Hey, I'm wise not because I've got this wisdom. God shows me what's going on.
And then the next words, but please tell me.
Yeah, so what is it?
Yeah, tell me about you,
Drew. Tell me.
And how, and I guess I'm asking you for a supposition here, but how does he know their fate? How is he able to discern that?
God would reveal it to him. That's just assumed in the text. And again, you know, back to our ancient Near Eastern context, Moses writing this 1450 BC, Egypt has, quote, wise men. They have court counselors. Mm-hmm. They have guys that deal with dreams. Okay, Moses is making the point, no, only God really knows the interpretation of dreams, not Pharaoh's wise men.
Right. It's not magic.
Just God knows that. That's right. It's not magic.
Now, is there any significance in these particular dreams themselves? And then as we get into the next chapter, we're going to talk about more dreams. Is there any significance in that?
I think the primary significance of this chapter is to set up the next one. Is that when they say to Pharaoh, ooh, Pharaoh's going to have a dream, and this cupbearer is going to go, ooh, hey.
That's right.
He's going to go, hey, forgive me. I forgot to tell you how I got back, you know, in your good graces. Mm-hmm. Hey, you're having this dream, you need to go to Joseph. That's all in the next chapter. So this chapter was to set up that one, but there's some important principles. So let me, you've been asking enough questions. It's time for me to ask you some questions.
Uh-oh.
So what?
You may not hear any answers.
Anything stick out to you, you know, as a reader, right? We prepare. So you've read this ahead of time tonight. Right. What? Anything jumping out? What do you see?
The only thing that really jumped out to me was the cupbearer did not remember him even after he did what the cupbearer asked. Other than that, no. And it may be just
okay. That's cool. So how about this? Is it a good thing to have your head lifted up?
I would say yes.
Okay, was it for the baker?
No.
Okay. But it was for the cupbearer. Mm-hmm. But to both of them, he said, like, look at verse 13. to the cupbearer, he says, within 3 more days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office.
Right.
To the baker, he says, in verse 19, within 3 more days, Pharaoh will lift up your head from you and hang you on a tree. So
what's the
be careful
the
with
difference
the,
there?
Well, there's a subtle, you know, be careful with the good news. Yeah, your head's going to be lifted up. For you, that's great. For you, that's going to cost your life. Just be careful. You know, I just won the lottery. For one guy, that might be great. For the next guy, that might cost him his life. Events in and of themselves are need a broader context to be interpreted.
Well, and as you're explaining that, I really now see even more so, this is gives us a good look into each of ourselves. You know?
It does, and Jamie, before you continue with your thought, I want to emphasize, I'm not making that is in the text. For instance, we did chapter, or verse 13, verse 19, now look at verse 20. It's a long verse, but at the end of that, and he lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. It just says that.
Right.
Then in the next verses, you find out that was good for the cupbearer, and it was a death sentence for the baker.
All at the same time.
But that's clearly what Moses is saying. He's repeated that 3 times now. Mm-hmm. Lifting up your head. You know, and pride, the elevation of position. You know what I mean? Status. Mm-hmm. Status can be good. Status can cost you your life. Status is a two-edged sword.
No, that makes total sense.
And Joseph can discern the difference.
And it's obvious to him. It's
yeah,
almost
he
like
he said to the chief baker, he's going to hang you from a tree.
And the birds are
3 days and you're out. To the cupbearer, 3 days you're going to be exalted. He knows the difference. Mm-hmm. Joseph does. Mm-hmm. So, you know, application-wise, the people of God, looking through God's eyes, right, not just as humans see, but through God eyes, because interpretations belong to God, can tell. But humans can't. Just being exalted, just achieving status, may or may not be a good thing.
Could be all she wrote.
Could be your end.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, anything else in that chapter?
I don't believe so.
Well, let's go on with the next one then. A lot of reading here. It's a big, long one. Now it I have one other thing.
Okay.
Oh, man, where was it? Okay, verse 15. Look at that.
Okay.
For I was, in fact, kidnapped from
the land of the Hebrews.
What? What land do they own? Who are Hebrews?
Didn't even put that together.
You know, wouldn't you expect him to say, I'm descended from Isaac, or, you know, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But what's his land of the Hebrews? Before there even were, you know, was a nation called the Hebrews.
Well, how does that work?
It's Moses right now, right? 400 some years later, indicating to them, hey, there's a place for us. There's a land that I'm taking you to, the land of Canaan. That's our land. So he's just naming it ahead of time.
Gotcha, in advance.
Yeah.
So. Gotcha. So I guess that begs the question. So in Joseph's time, did he say, I came from the land of the Hebrews, or was that...
Well, so yeah, that's exactly right. That would beg that question. And I would say, I can't imagine Joseph's actually saying that because it didn't even exist.
Right.
How could that have been in his mind?
I came from the land of my father.
So I think that's Moses saying that, which raises one other question. And this is a really important one, ultimately. This is like one of the most, next to the question, who is Jesus? And I would say in a strange way, on par with that. This is the only other question I know in our existence that's as powerful as that question. And that's, what are these words we're reading? Is this just a story, or is this God's words? And if it's God's words, then you might technically phrase a question this way. Where is the locus of inspiration? In other words, I saw your head, your chin changed angle there. Is Moses inspired? Did everything Moses ever say get recorded in Scripture? Was Joseph inspired? Did everything Joseph ever say get recorded in Scripture? How would you accurately identify what is inspired, that is God-breathed? What are actually God's words? And I would say the answer to that is what's written on the page. That's what's inspired.
Gotcha.
So for me to say, yeah, I think Moses wrote those words in Joseph's mouth. I don't think he actually said, I come from the land of the Hebrews, because there wasn't such a thing
right
at that time.
Right.
In his existence, in his life, they were wanderers in the land of Canaan. They didn't own anything there.
Right.
They were sojourners. All we have is a little cave that Abraham bought that we saw a few chapters ago. He owned a little tract of land, but it wouldn't have been called the land of the Hebrews or anything like that. But Moses writes that in to Joseph's speech to tell his audience, hey, we're going to our land.
Identification purposes?
Yeah. Hey, we're going, this belongs to us.
Going home.
God promised this to Abraham a long time ago. This is ours. The land of the Hebrews is ours because God promised it to Abraham. We're his descendants.
So as they would share.
But like an Egyptian guy, we would go, what?
Yeah, they would. Yeah.
You know, that's like a guy saying in 17th century Britain, yeah, I'm from America. Mm-hmm. The guy would go, what's that? Never even heard of that. Well, you're going to hear about it in about 200 years. But, you know, right now, yeah, you don't know anything about that.
No, that makes total sense.
But the question that it raises is, where is the inspiration? So, in other words, you know, jumping the gun when you get to the Gospels, and be it Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, record, hey, Jesus said this. Whether he said that in history exactly or not, doesn't matter. The locus of inspiration is the text.
Right.
But here's an application of that. If you stand before God on Judgment Day and your defense over whatever issue is, hey, I thought you said, because Joseph said back here, I'm from the land of the Hebrews. How do you think God would respond to that? Do you think God's going to go, look, idiot, Joseph, there wasn't even a land of the Hebrews then. How'd you fall for that? He's not going to say that. God's going to say, that's right. That's exactly what I said. That's how he'll answer that question. So, just an important thing to point out. You ready for the big chapter?
Yes, sir.
All right, chapter 41. Now, it happened at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream. And behold, he was standing by the Nile. And lo, from the Nile there came up 7 cows, sleek, fat. They grazed in the marsh grass. Then behold, 7 other cows came up after them from the Nile, ugly and gaunt. They stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. And the ugly and gaunt cows ate up the 7 sleek and fat cows. Then Pharaoh awoke. He fell asleep and dreamed a second time, and behold, 7 ears of grain came up on a single stalk, plump and good. Then behold, 7 ears, thin and scorched by the east wind, sprouted up after them. And the thin ears swallowed up the 7 plump and full ears. Then Pharaoh woke, and behold, it was a dream. And in the morning his spirit was troubled. So he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. Pharaoh told them his dreams. There was no one who could interpret them to Pharaoh. Then the chief cupbearer spoke to Pharaoh, saying, I would make mention today of my own offenses. Pharaoh was furious with his servants, and he put me in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard, both me and the chief baker. When he had a dream, we had a dream on the same night. He and I, each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. Now a Hebrew youth was with us there, a servant of the captain of the bodyguard, and we related them to him. He interpreted our dreams for us. To each one he interpreted according to his own dream. And just as he interpreted for us, so it happened. He restored me in my office, but he hanged him. Then Pharaoh sent and called for Joseph. He hurriedly brought him out of the dungeon. When he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came to Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I've had a dream, but no one can interpret it. I have heard it said about you, and when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Joseph then answered Pharaoh, saying, it's not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. So Pharaoh spoke to Joseph, in my dream, behold, I was standing on the bank of the Nile. Behold, 7 cows, fat and sleek, came up out of the Nile. They grazed in the marsh grass. Lo, 7 other cows came up after them, poor and very ugly and gaunt, such as I had never seen for ugliness in all the land of Egypt. And the lean and ugly cows ate up the 7 fat cows. Yet when they had devoured them, it could not be detected that they had devoured them, for they were just as ugly as before. Then I awoke. I saw also in my dream, and behold, 7 ears full and good came up on a single stalk, and lo, 7 ears withered and thin, all scorched by the east wind, sprouted up after them, and the thin ears swallowed the 7 good ears. Then I told it to the magicians, but there was no one who could explain it to me. Now Joseph said to Pharaoh, Pharaoh's dreams are one and the same. God has told to Pharaoh what he's about to do. The 7 good cows are 7 years, and the 7 good years are 7 years. The dreams are one and the same. The 7 lean and ugly cows that come up after them are 7 years. The 7 thin ears scorched by the east wind will be 7 years of famine. It is as I have spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown to Pharaoh what he's about to do. Behold, 7 years of great abundance are coming in all the land of Egypt, and after them 7 years of famine will come. All the abundance will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will ravage the land. So the abundance will be unknown in the land because of the subsequent famine, for it will be very severe. Now, as for the repeating of the dream to Pharaoh twice, it means that the matter is determined by God. God will quickly bring it about. Now, let Pharaoh look for a man discerning and wise. Set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh take action to appoint overseers in charge of the land, and let him exact a fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt in the 7 years of abundance. Then let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming and store up the grain for food in the cities under Pharaoh's authority. Let them guard it. Let the food become as a reserve for the land, for the 7 years of famine which will occur in the land of Egypt, so that the land will not perish during the famine. Now, the proposal seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his servants. Then Pharaoh said to his servants, "Can we find a man like this, in whom is a divine spirit?" So Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has informed you of all this, there's no one so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and according to your command, all my people shall do homage. Only in the throne I will be greater than you." Pharaoh said to Joseph, "See, I've set you over all the land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh took off his signet ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand, and he clothed him in garments of fine linen, put the gold necklace around his neck. He had him ride in his second chariot, and they proclaimed before him, "Bow the knee," and he set him over the land of Egypt. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Though I am Pharaoh, yet without your permission, no one shall raise his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt." Then Pharaoh named Joseph Zaphnath-Paneah, and he gave him Aseneth, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, as his wife. And Joseph went forth over the land of Egypt. Now Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh, went through all the land of Egypt. During the 7 years of plenty, the land brought forth abundantly, so he gathered all the food of these 7 years which had occurred in the land of Egypt. And he placed the food in the cities. He placed in every city the food from its own surrounding fields. Thus Joseph stored up grain in great abundance, like the sand of the sea, until he stopped measuring it, for it was beyond measure. Now, before the year of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph, whom Aseneth, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore to him. Joseph named the firstborn Manasseh, for he said, "God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household." He named the second Ephraim, for he said, "God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction." When the 7 years of plenty which had been in the land of Egypt came to an end, the 7 years of famine began to come, just as Joseph had said. Then there was famine in all the lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. So when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried out to Pharaoh for bread. Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, "Go to Joseph. Whatever he says to you, you shall do." When the famine was spread over all the face of the earth, then Joseph opened the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians. The famine was severe in the land of Egypt. The people of all the earth came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph, because this famine was severe in all the earth. Man, that's a lot of reading.
Yeah, it was. How did they know, Bob, that the others, the magicians that were trying to interpret these dreams, how did they know that they weren't right?
Well, I can't say that exactly from the text, other than I'm not even sure they tried. Yeah, I think there was an ominous portion to this, an ominous, atmosphere to it, and I think they were afraid to do it. You know, you don't want to be guessing on something that heavy. You know, I mean, right. Pharaoh's not beyond just killing you.
Well,
he'd put his baker and cupbearer in prison for who knows what, but it may not have been anything.
And then took the life of the baker.
Yeah, so, you know, he may be putting us out here. I think it's totally sincere on his part, but they realized, I don't want to I don't want to say what this is if I'm wrong.
So is it a fear thing on their part?
I would suspect that. And I can't answer that other than, you know, the text just says they couldn't do it. So I imagine they're reluctant to even try.
And there was no fear on Joseph's part, even though he knew that he wasn't just come to give him, you know, the great news.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't, you know, the charge, and that's what a lot of people would want to be, is a bearer of great news.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't great news, it would seem to me that they would be fearful.
Yep. Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think ever since his initial dream, right, that he tells his brothers and his mm-hmm. dad, and then the guy's in jail, and everything he touches turns to gold, I think he's feeling pretty confident. He feels, in other words, from the text, we could say God was with him. That mm-hmm. is stated a number of times. He feels that.
Right.
That's the source of his right. confidence. He feels that. The other guys don't feel that at all. The Egyptian magicians just feel scared.
Yeah, the fear. And they don't want to, I think, you know, as I'm reading this and learning what you're teaching me about, you know, writing at this time, that fear would be obvious, and it doesn't go away. I mean, here, and we could get into the prophets, and they didn't like what the prophet had to say, and he mm. was done.
Mm-hmm.
It was over.
Yeah, Joseph here doesn't necessarily have good news or bad news. He just has the data.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is he knows what to do about it. That's the good news.
Right.
Is we can make a plan for this. But the dream itself, there's good and bad in it.
Right.
For instance, Jamie, as we constantly try to remind ourselves and the listeners about the cosmic battle, when I said there's good and bad in this dream, those words are actually used. You'll see the word good actually appears in the English text, whether it's concerning the ears of corn or the cows. I think it's ears of corn. It actually says they're good. But that, like, ugly and gaunt, you know, is how he described that word ugly in English is a translation of the Hebrew word for evil. So the words good and evil are actually in this text.
Specifically.
There's a couple of implications from that. One is, I don't want to press that too much, other than those words are actually there. I think anyone could have discerned that. Hey, these first cows that are fat and sleek, you know, they're healthy, good. Man, we could eat those. That's good. And those gaunt ones, you know, you can see their ribs, and ooh, that's not good. Anybody could discern that. I'm sure Pharaoh could discern that. But Joseph cannot just see that with his human eye. Yeah, these cows are good, those are bad. But he knows what to do about it. He can discern the essence of good and evil and what to do. That's underpinning this whole chapter. Another implication from that is, if you don't know the biblical languages, you need to listen to those who do.
Mm-hmm.
Because things can be, though not necessarily, lost in translation. And to translate, you know, those cows as, you know, these are the ugly, gaunt, the word actually was evil. And I understand what the translator's doing. There's nothing evil in and of itself about a cow. It's either fed or underfed, you know. Right. But it is the word they used.
In the text.
Yeah, it says evil. So you got to be careful of that stuff, because you won't pick it up in English, you know, what may be a very important theme going on.
Well, and it's the birth of being proactive for dang sure.
Yeah.
You know, and I saw that in and it was interesting where Joseph said, you know, what God is telling Pharaoh is.
Yeah. let's pause there too, because here's another thing that's going on in the text. If you know anything about Egypt, they don't know God.
Period.
They know Ra. They know Amun. They know a thousand gods. Osiris, mm-hmm. Isis, Hathor. They know a thousand. And a thousand actually might not exhaust it. I'm not exaggerating that term. They've got countless deities. But, so when Joseph says God, you know, I think Pharaoh imagined what's going on in their minds. Because I'm not sure, in this case, it's like the other chapter where Moses is just putting that word in Joseph. I don't think so. I think that's how Joseph would have said that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they would have gone, who's that?
Right.
I mean, Ra, Amun, Osiris. Anubis, who's God? But now let me address that even one step further. Even though I just said I don't think they knew what he's talking about, at another level, I think they knew exactly what he was talking about.
Because
that there was one God who ruled everything. I think that's in the heart of all of mankind, and always has been. So even though Egypt had this whole pantheon and deity system set up, I think deep in their hearts they knew there was just one guy.
Well, if we go back to Potiphar, obviously Egyptian, correct?
Yeah.
So he's in their practices.
Yeah.
He recognizes God's handiwork with Joseph. And turns over
and says God.
Everything.
He doesn't say Ra.
Right.
He says God.
Right.
Part of that is because Joseph's foreign.
Right.
So they're attributing another deity to him. But part of it, too, is what lies in the heart of all mankind. They know.
Well, and it didn't take Pharaoh long to say, all right, you're my guy. You said I needed to find a guy that I could put in charge of this.
Yeah, he has no problem. I mean, imagine the priesthood in Egypt just going, we just got knock down a peg.
Right.
He's putting this guy over all of us.
The slave, right?
Yeah, we have all these temples, we got all these pyramids, and he's saying this guy's God is bigger than our... And they're not... I don't even think they're arguing with that. They couldn't interpret the dream, and he just came in and said, here's the deal. And he had a solution to it. You'll see the same thing in the book of Daniel, and when Nebuchadnezzar, you know, says to Daniel, or to the court... concerning Daniel, the spirit of the Most High God is in this guy. Like, I know we got Marduk and Bel and all, you know, Nabu and all our gods, Ishtar and what have you, but there's one guy that runs the whole show.
And again, God's favor is very much displayed. And again, the responsibility level now just, I mean, it keeps going up a notch at a time.
Yeah, and let's say this. We don't have time to develop it, but you could study this for your entire lifetime. Egypt was an unbelievable culture.
Mm-hmm.
At this time, they ruled the world. They were so advanced, it's not even funny.
They had cupbearers and bakers.
They've got gold everywhere. They're phenomenally wealthy. Their system, you know, a lot of it owed it or was owed to their geography with the Nile River, but their system was cool. I mean, it was really well run.
Mm-hmm.
They were phenomenally wealthy, had the most powerful army at this time on Earth. They were the United States times 10 in their day. And they just placed everything they have in Joseph's care. Just like Potiphar's house,
mm-hmm.
just like the jail, now they're placing the entire nation
of Egypt.
Of Egypt, who ruled the world. So basically, the world is in Joseph's hand
at
this
30.
Point. He's 30.
At 30. So he has been in captivity for 17 years now?
Quite some time. Because it was 2 years just between the time of the dream.
Right.
Well, how long he was in Potiphar's house before the wife snitched, you know, makes up the story on him. And then how long he was running the jail before the... It's been quite some time. Mm-hmm. And he's 30.
And he's now advanced to...
He's running the world. He's the most powerful guy on earth.
And what does it say, other than my throne?
Yeah, Pharaoh goes, look, I'm not going to abdicate, but basically, he's going to be like Potiphar. Mm-hmm. I'm going to eat and drink and have a good time. You run the whole thing.
Because he recognizes God.
Yeah, he's not just punting, you know, like I'm a lazy dude. But he's going, it's actually better for us if you do it. So I'm not going to quit being Pharaoh, but you have carte blanche over this entire nation.
And in that 13 years, he went from captivity to...
From peasant kid to begin, you know.
Zero to hero.
Shepherder, zero to hero.
Yeah.
And then some. Ruling the world. Because God was with him. And he was faithful in all that had been given to him.
And maintaining and can I use the word keeping the seed of the woman? And keeping that going. Because, you know, as we read in the temptation, you know, not the temptation, but in his temptation, he could have easily
would be easy to fall prey.
Yeah.
He didn't.
Yeah.
And it was day after day, and he didn't fall for that.
And I'm really, really very, very happy that you pointed out the wisdom and discernment that is being highlighted, I guess would be the word, in the last three chapters, that there is power in wisdom and discernment. There is blessings. There is favor that is in wisdom and discernment. And I know that we talk about it so many times when we pray and we're asking for wisdom and discernment. And, you know, to really, this gives us a good picture of what that can result in. Yes. What our requests can actually mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are great observations. Here's a quote from Pharaoh in verse 38 of chapter 41. Can we find a man like this in whom is a divine spirit? That he recognized, like we've been saying, something very different in Joseph. It says in verse 8, so he sent, that's Pharaoh, sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. All. They can't do it. And there, you know, we have a fair amount has been preserved from Egypt. A lot of that's due to their climate. You know, when you write on papyrus and so on, they're so arid there. That gets preserved. Dude, we have a lot of their material. And you would describe those guys as wise. You know, what a lot of them were saying. Their court officials and so on. Very, very wise. I wish we had guys like that running our government today.
Right now.
Very wise. Here's how they handled the tax system, for instance. Imagine this. Everything was dependent on the Nile. Okay, so when that thing floods in their springtime, it's, you know, depending on how much runoff there is, that's going to determine how much you can farm. So, bad year, it doesn't overflow much. And that's really probably, in historical terms, the essence of this famine that's coming. You know, it's not going to be a lot of snow in winter, and the parts of the Nile that feed, there's going to be a lot of runoff. So, there's going to be famine. Right? We can't... The banks of the Nile would overflow, and that water would just feed their farms, man, and they'd develop irrigation channels, and they would max that out as best they could. And then they could just produce so much from the soil was so rich with that kind of watering system. They could produce way more than they could eat, which means they could have an army. You could just feed the guys, you know, for free while they concentrate on battle and so on. So Egypt just was phenomenally wealthy based on the Nile River.
Now, do you think that...
But hold on. Hold on to your question. So the way they would tax is they would put up stakes in further and further increments of distance from the Nile. And however far the flood, the overflow came up, to that extent they would tax you. So if you couldn't farm very much that year, they didn't tax you very much. If it was a huge overflow, they taxed you a lot because you could produce so much. So it was this floating tax, you know, that corresponded exactly to how much you could produce. It was a perfect system. So all that to say, these, quote, wise men and magicians, they're not a joke. They're very powerful people. You know, and you even see in the book of Exodus, when Moses comes in and, you know, starts doing some miracles, mm-hmm. they do that too for a while.
Up to an extent.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? They right. could do that. So these are not guys to be laughed off as conjurers or jesters. They're powerful people. You're very smart in many ways. In other words, humanly, about as smart as you could be. But that's nothing compared to Joseph. Because Joseph has a divine spirit. He's seen through God's eyes, not just human eyes.
Now, do you think left to their own devices, the Egyptians would have... Well, hindsight's always 20/20, but they wouldn't have had the foresight without Joseph.
No, they'd have reveled in their abundance and eaten what they could, get drunk and eat, and then it's gone.
Right.
Then the first bad year, I wish we would have saved some of that. Yeah.
That wisdom.
Right, the foresight.
Mm-hmm. It saved a nation.
That's right. And again, imagine, they've already built buildings by this time that it would be very hard for us to build even today.
Right.
They were technologically superior. Their medicine was unbelievably advanced. We don't have all night to go into that stuff. I just lay that out for our listeners. You can, those books are out there. You can go read and see pictures. Like, just go to King Tut's exhibit. He was a nothing king. He was, you know, next to zero on their list of, you know, prominent guys. And the amount of gold that was buried with him.
Unbelievable.
Even as a young guy, died in his youth, was... unbelievable.
Well, you know what I find just amazing in the last three chapters, Bob, is you have Joseph. He was 13 when he was sold into slavery. So, hadn't had a lot of years of quote-unquote schooling. And then he goes to Egypt. I imagine he's, you know, because Potiphar is a higher up, you know, he gets some pretty decent quote-unquote education. But his wisdom
That's exactly right. You know, it's a great point. I'm really glad you raised that because we run into that today because, you know, as we cover worldview issues at church and mm-hmm. in our own personal conversations and so on, people today respect education. And I understand that. But that needs to be viewed, that in and of itself needs to be viewed with wisdom. Just to say somebody went to Harvard or Stanford, I'm not necessarily impressed by that. Someone with wisdom is who I respect. And wisdom is not the equivalent of IQ, and it's not the equivalent of education. Though both of those things could greatly contribute mm-hmm. to wisdom. I mean, those are great things in and of themselves. But without wisdom, they're nothing. They're nothing without wisdom. It doesn't matter how, quote, smart you are. It matters how wise you are.
So let me coax you out on a plank here. So my personal feeling is that wisdom and knowledge are different. Is that what I'm hearing you say as well? Or
there would be some overlap,
mm-hmm.
but they're not equivalent.
Right.
If that's what you're asking.
Yeah.
They are not equivalent. But there is some overlap there. Joseph's not naive. Right. Joseph has knowledge, but he's got wisdom, and that's worth a lot more.
So knowledge doesn't equal wisdom.
It's not equivalent.
Right, yeah. No, and I got that from this, too, you know, as I was reading through it, you know.
The wise men have knowledge, and they can't do anything about this.
And I was reading it, and I thought about that. I'm like, wait a second, Joseph was 13 years old. Not a lot of exposure to any concepts at 13. I mean, think about when you and I were 13 years old. Not a lot of wisdom there. But yet, in a very short period of time, he moved into that position. Or migrated. I don't know what the word I'm looking for there is, Bob.
He had insight. You know, he had divine insight. He's looking through God's eyes. So, in fact, as you read the chapter, you're not necessarily blown away by his wisdom. You're going, yeah. You know, you're nodding your head, right? Mm-hmm. Wisdom is often pretty simplistic.
Right.
It's not, like, simple-minded, but it's fair. Once you see it laid out, you're going, yeah. Yeah, you know, like you read about guys in the history of our own nation, you know, that became billionaires, or here was what Rockefeller did, or here's what J.P. Morgan did, and you read their stories, and you're going, yeah. Well, but why didn't everybody do that?
Almost
they,
like a common
they
sense
didn't.
Issue.
Those guys had that insight that was pretty simple when you see it exposed. But to have it at the time, you know, if it was easy, everybody would do it.
Well, yeah, if you get called into Pharaoh's chambers and he says, you know, I need you to interpret this dream for me or I'm going to kill you. Well, you know, I don't know if I'm in the interpreting mood today, Pharaoh. You might want to get somebody else.
Yeah. Well, they're hedging. It's all political. Mm-hmm. Joseph has no political stake.
And I think that's made pretty obvious here.
He's got nothing to gain or lose. He actually, you know, God's going to promote him, but he doesn't owe anybody anything. He's just saying, here's the deal.
And it's both, you see both the faith and the respect for God displayed. You know, Abraham, very, 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 very strong faith. There is a sense of respect that I see here with Joseph when he says, you know, God's the one that interprets dreams. It's not me.
Yeah. But you saw that also with Abraham in that, remember his army? He takes his household and he defeats these foreign kings. I mean, he was very a respected and powerful guy.
Right.
But I guess let's bring it back to our culture again. The way these guys are accessing wisdom is they're believing God. Hey, in our culture, you are labeled, whether it's to your face or behind your back, an idiot for doing that.
Because you're right. And it's very obvious, as we pointed out, the wisdom of Joseph. And Pharaoh's guys don't have that wisdom.
No. And all their education, all their everything, they're nothing compared to Joseph. And he doesn't have their schooling. He doesn't have their... All he's got is God. Mm-hmm. But imagine that's, you know, that's all I've got is God.
Right.
Which is everything.
Right.
But just as in Egypt, our culture mocks that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not wisdom. That is being naive in our culture, in the world sense.
Here's putting modern shoe leather on it. It almost turns my stomach to give this example, but we've all lived this. What I, you know, a few years ago was working Oak Valley at the rec center. So you're interacting with these, you know, younger folks, and they're dating around, and they don't really know where you're coming from, but you're friends with them, you work with them, you're rubbing shoulders with them every day. It was common. The common, quote, wisdom was, if you're dating, you know, you need to be sleeping with that person so you can decide if that's going to be a good mate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, have you ever seen the data on that?
Well, I like think it's
just
pretty obvious.
From our own culture, going, you know what, that doesn't work. And then they'd have some flippant kind of proverb, you know, well, how do you know if the shoe fits if you don't try it on? Really? That's what you're equating love to, putting on a shoe? Well, it works. If you love each other, it works, okay?
Well, and that's
not
common, Bob. What you're talking about is 100% probably more common out there than the opposite.
They look at you aghast if you're not doing that.
Yep.
And it destroys relationships.
Sure does. No foundation.
It doesn't make them better. It's the most foolish thing I've ever seen. You know, it's like, how about loving the other guy? That's what actually works in a marriage.
Right.
Not seeing if you're sexually compatible.
Right. No, I'm with you. A little rabbit trail there, but
It's the wisdom of the day contrasted with the wisdom
sure.
of God.
Sure.
And so here's all these Egyptian wise men, you know, and they can't handle this. And it seems fairly straightforward, actually.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Joseph has no problem with it.
And it's an easy jump here to go straight to Darwin and say, okay, there's somebody that our culture views as having wisdom.
Yeah. Well, this guy was so smart, he noticed all these things, and you're going, no, that isn't even close to what actually
right. happened. Right. Absolutely.
And he's verifiable on a number of fronts. Not right.
Mm-hmm.
But the wisdom of the age is, you're an idiot if you don't believe that.
Well, and the older I get, Bob, and the more I get really, the closer I get to the word, wisdom to me has a whole new meaning than it did before. It's not a stature.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way of being. It's an understanding. It's a relationship. All of that is wisdom.
Well, we can actually define it. That you're actually correct, and we can define that. It comes up, you know, comes to bear more in the books that follow, in the wisdom literature, Proverbs, Psalms, Job, Ecclesiastes, and so on. But wisdom isn't limited to just that. Wisdom is throughout the scriptures.
Sure.
That's where it's just hammered out as a main theme. But wisdom can be defined as, wisdom is the ability to live life skillfully by piercing to the heart of a matter and making correct choices. That's what wisdom technically is.
That should be a bumper sticker. It needs to be real big.
So
you know, it might cover the whole trunk, but it needs to be
Let's say
one.
It again. So think about it as we say it. Wisdom is the ability to live life skillfully by piercing to the heart of a matter and making correct choices. That's what wisdom is. And you can see that in different realms of life, you know, as I mentioned earlier, when you get into the wisdom literature, Proverbs and Psalms and so on, and you see the synonyms for wisdom and how they're developing that context. This is material for a later time, but skill is part of wisdom, right? That's why we said wisdom is living life skillfully. You know, a person who's skilled in their job or their craft, there's wisdom in that.
Mm-hmm.
I can't go today and knock on a bank's door and say, hey, I really want to work here. I've got, you know, I don't have any of those skills developed. Those
right.
things are, I can't go to the Rockies and say, hey, I want to play first base. You know, I don't have the skill of doing that or hitting the ball or, you know, there's skill involved in our different vocations and so on, but skill's a big part of it. Knowledge is a part of wisdom. Moral integrity is a part of wisdom. There's a lot of components to it. But they all play into this statement again. Wisdom is the ability to live life skillfully by piercing to the heart of a matter and making correct choices. So you saw that with Joseph. You know, was he piercing to the heart of the matter when he says to Potiphar's wife, I can't sin against God? Mm-hmm. Right? That's going straight to the bottom line. Right? He's splitting that out and discerning what's really going on and saying, I can't do that. You know, there are tangible, physical pleasures to what you're offering. But the price I would have to pay down below that, to sin against God, I can't make that choice.
Not worth it.
It's not worth it to sin against Him. So you see wisdom displayed that way. And then in interpretation, right? Mm-hmm. And then knowing what to do about it. The skill of, so, if this is the case, we need to do X, Y, and Z. All those are components of wisdom. But Joseph is being portrayed as just farly, that's not even a word, but greatly surpassing the Egyptians in that realm. And that was what they were known for.
Well, and there was no hesitation on their part in you know,
they know they're up against a wall. They want the solution.
Yeah.
They're not playing politics. They're going, we need to survive a famine.
And they trusted his word.
Yeah.
And
they want out. They want out of the famine. If he's got a solution, they want that.
And even though they knew, so 14 years went, so he was 30 years old, and then 14 more years. Seven of good, seven of famine, right?
That's right.
So 14 years have transpired here.
Well, will have transpired
right.
In the next couple of chapters.
Right. And, you know, because the famine started, and then everybody wanted to come.
Yeah, he's having kids, you know, before the famine starts, he's already having children, Ephraim and Manasseh, who become, we didn't get into that, but they become tribes of Israel,
right?
Joseph is portrayed as the heir, the firstborn. He gets his two sons become tribes. He gets a double portion in the household of Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
So, not Reuben, Joseph, you know, gets bumped up the line.
This is, I really, you know, as I was preparing tonight, Bob, I was really excited for these three chapters because I guess for me, I get excited when I see the life application. The life application is obvious to me. When the life application isn't obvious to me, then obviously it takes work. You have mm-hmm. to research, mm-hmm. discern, have mm-hmm. some wisdom, and source out the life application, but here there's so many different concepts and truths that are brought to the forefront. Faith, trust, belief, wisdom, God versus all these other gods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who's the real God? Who gets recognized as a real God over and over and over and over again? And ultimately, who has the power? I think was the last thing that I saw displayed as we read about the famine and you know God told Pharaoh that's what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the fastball, kid. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It's coming right down the pipe.
And the reason, so why would God be doing that? Why does He intervene in Egypt's affairs?
I don't know. I had that in my notes. I don't know. But my guess would be after your tutelage, so that Egypt would know He is God.
Well, that's a great answer. That's not the one I necessarily would have said, but you know, having heard you say that, you know, I might lean in that direction. I think there's also, you could substantiate from the text, because Israel's going down there. He's prepared. Egypt is like a womb to the nation of Israel. You know, here's God.
An incubator.
The incubator, the womb that He's going to raise His nation in. So it is important to Him that Egypt does well. So there's some of that going on also. But yeah, there's also God cares for everything. And showing these peasants through Moses who are coming out of Egypt, that think about it this way. Think of what Egypt or Israel's learning under Moses. That God's not just their God. Like if you go to Canaan, they go, yeah, our God is Baal. And if you're in Egypt, our God is Ra, the sun god, or Amun, you know, or whatever. If you go to Babylon, our God is Marduk. If you go to Assyria, our God is Ashur. You know, but so it's not just that Moses is saying to Israel, your God is Yahweh. He's saying Yahweh is the only God. He's the guy who created the whole thing. You're his people, but he's bigger than just God of Israel.
Right.
He's God of everything. You know, that's what he's telling them. So, look, his guy Joseph ruled Egypt. We're slaves here, but we're not inferior to them. We're vastly superior to the Egyptians by reason of who our God is. Not because we in and of ourselves are greater than them. The Egyptians are great people. Everybody on earth is great people. There's not hierarchy among people. He's saying, but who we are because of our relationship to God trumps every other thing on earth. He's not just our God. He's the creator. He's actually the Egyptians' God.
Mm-hmm.
He's the Canaanites' God. There's only one. It's our guy.
And they recognize him.
The Egyptians they're not fighting that. They want that out they from the famine.
But they recognize it.
Yeah.
And I have this little visual in my brain. You know, I always have these little movies going on here, Bob. But I could see Pharaoh pulling somebody aside and saying, you know, this Joseph guy's, you know, pretty smart. You know, his God is very powerful and has really shown favor on Joseph. Maybe we should, you know, they really recognize, you know, quote unquote, Joseph's God.
Mm-hmm.
It's obvious.
Well, because they can see him in Joseph.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if they're not looking at Joseph, they don't see him.
At all.
Right? If they're not looking at Joseph, they're seeing Amun or Ra or whatever. And then they're lost, and, you know, at the whim of every...
Well, you know, you think about the example that Joseph is setting as opposed to, you know, the rest of the Israelites at this point in time. I think, and I think Moses is making a point of that, of pointing that out. But if you look at the example of Joseph, if you were Pharaoh, how could you not see that? I mean, it's as obvious as the nose on your face. It's his God, quote unquote, is very powerful. Is, you know, I'm guessing that's what they're thinking. You know, as Pharaoh's over here talking to his guy, he's like, you know, man, his guy, you know, this guy, he's been blessed. You know, he was a slave. You know, Potiphar gave him control of everything, and it just went great. And then he went to jail. They gave him control of that, and now he, you know, he interpreted my dreams. You know. His God must, you know, as they went through that whole process, they had to realize, and I think it's obvious because it's in there. They did realize that Joseph's God was God. And what I don't get is why they didn't, you know, say, okay, Ra, we'll see you later. You know, I'm
with
Joseph.
Oh, yeah, well, that's it. That's a gigantic discussion for,
yeah,
you know, that'll inform nearly all of our podcasts and all the ones we've already done. But the I guess I could introduce the answer to that without really explaining all the ramifications of it right now, and that is to say, within each human being, in a our core, our essence, as the image of God, that exists in three components. There's an intellectual component to that. There's a volitional component to that. And there's an emotional component to that. Volitional.
Volitional
means your will.
Okay.
Your determination. So I think what you're seeing is the Egyptians intellectually going, ooh, this makes a lot more sense to go with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And thus volitionally decide, you know, yeah, we're going with him. They make that decision. Hey, Joseph's in charge. But emotionally,
right,
they never committed to, they would lose their identity to do that. And I would say, then lose it. You have everything to gain and nothing to, keep going with your intellect and your will. You know, keep going to make your emotions line up with that. But they're totally, so they would lose, Pharaoh would lose his whole identity. Right? Pharaoh would have to say, you know what? I'm not really Ra's representative.
Yeah, I'm
here
not
on
part
Earth.
God.
I'm not God. I'm not divine. I'm just another guy. And you know what? These great pyramids we built and all that, it was kind of a wasted effort because there really isn't a Ra or an Amun. So you can see them not wanting to do that. But they want to survive the famine.
Right.
And Amun isn't going to do anything about your famine. There is no Amun.
Well, Amun didn't even give him a heads up.
Yeah, they want to get through the next 14 years. So they're on board with that. But they're not, they haven't sold out to that.
Right.
They've committed to that for, you know, the pressures of the day. And so to our listeners, you know, if you have emotionally committed to the Christian faith, but you haven't intellectually or volitionally done that, you're not there. If you've intellectually committed, but you haven't emotionally or volitionally, you're not there. And, you know, we could go on through the whole thing. Bottom line is, unless you engage all three of those components of your core, you're not there.
Mm-hmm.
And
makes
you
sense.
Need to be there. All three of those. You need to find all your joy in God.
Mm-hmm.
You need to intellectually submit your mind to the will of God as it's revealed in the scriptures. You need to decide volitionally to follow him and order your life accordingly. And if you haven't done those three things, you're not there.
You couldn't be.
That's what it means when it says Abraham believed God. He engaged all three of those things. He put all his chips in with God. Emotionally, intellectually, and it was against reason. You know, like, man, I'm 100. Sarah's 90. You're saying we're gonna have these kids. Okay. That didn't make intellectual sense compared to the intellect of the day.
Mm-hmm.
But he was right. He
100%.
Was right believing that. He was right. He did have a kid. That kid did multiply. When they come out of Egypt, they're a million strong, minimum.
Yeah, no, I am with you, Bob.
So, anyway, probably time to wrap this one up.
I think it is. I think we're at about a little over now.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Okay. All right. We had a short one the time before. This one's a little bigger. All right, let's say a prayer. Lord, we ponder over the wisdom of Joseph. And we ponder your words as you tell your story, the history of the world, your history, the world's history, our own history, our identification, where we fit in the story. And we understand that you've created us, hearkening back to our very first podcasts, in your image. Each person, whether you're a Pharaoh
are a slave. You're the image of God, each of us. And thus we're called to respond to you in correspondence to the fact that we're your image. We have a mind, we have a will, we have emotions. All of those need to commit to you. So we lay that at your feet. Ask you to powerfully touch our hearts. Save us as we put our faith and trust in you. Give us wisdom. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.